I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
We were back once again in the Lighthouse for the Skanon podcast, and I'm joined by Jason Kyle and Philip Bagnall, as per usual.
Hello. Yes.
So, big news today, April 29th, 2004. Finally have 7 new cast members for Star Wars Episode 7. This is the only Star Wars news that we've had in the last while, save them saying, oh, we're shooting. So it's nice of them to actually give us something.
Yes, yeah. Also, everything to do with Star Wars is news. Pictures of deserts are news. Everything is news since it comes to Star Wars.
Yeah, which is, frankly, drives the likes of me and Jason somewhat batty.
Would be fair to say. Well, it certainly will.
It certainly will now.
But yeah, there's interesting things, and if Donald Gleason has jumped in there.
Yep, so it's nice to have an Irish Star Wars representative again.
We look like we're going to have a red-headed action figure from Ireland.
Red-headed action figure? Is that allowed? In the cosmic global rules of, you know, people being in
that
things.
Assumes that his character is human.
You can think like that. I just think of it's a film. They have to have action figures. You can get exacting about it all.
Well, you're
good at these things.
Well, we also have Andy Serkis there, and we can be pretty sure that he's going to mocap somebody. Because
I heard he's mocapping a planet.
A big talking growling planet.
Yeah, it's about time. Yeah. It's his ultimate job. As well as no Lucas.
Yes, the J.J. Abrams on behind the scenes directing. So he's a massive Star Wars nut. So
Kazdan wrote the best part of the original trilogy.
Yeah, they threw out the original script and they brought in Lawrence Kasdan.
There's reasons for optimism if you're a Star Wars fan. There's reasons to be absolutely not looking forward to the next 18 months if you're not a particular Star Wars fan. But
I'm not. Ooh, me. Right here.
Yeah,
but the other acting additions are interesting. John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac, who recently appeared together in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Make your own Mr. Kennedy, shot them into space jokes. Everybody else has.
And Max von Sydow.
Which is a wonderful addition, really.
A wonderful addition, but
the Christopher Lee of this generation.
Isn't Christopher Lee the Christopher Lee of this generation?
So you're calling it now, he's going to be a Dark Lord, Sith Lord.
How could he not be? He's Max von Sydow.
He played a Nazi in Escape the Victory. Of course he's going to be a Dark Lord.
Although, mind you, he did play the Exorcist. So who's to say he's not on God's side?
So Adam Driver is a star on the rise now, so we can take it that he will probably take the lead.
He's very good.
As you know, I thought he was going to be the villain, or at least that was the original.
Well, then, a lead villain. He'll definitely be one of the
main parts. He's good. I like him in Girls. I like them in Llewyn Davis. He's a fine actor.
Yeah, yeah.
The return of the original cast is also, you know, from a continuity point of view, is quite helpful.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess so, but for about the last five to ten years, Harrison Ford has just gone around in every film he's been in, looking like he's about to fall asleep.
Yeah, and Mark Hamill has mostly been voicing characters and not acting as such.
But I'm more intrigued by Mark Hamill than in some way that I am with Harrison Ford. I want to see what's happened to Mark Hamill. I want to see him on screen.
Mark Hamill, he has made a big career out of voicing for TV. And, of course, his biggest gig was probably the Joker in the Batman animated series. Fine job he did.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this is his first, I think it's the first film in a while. So we'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait. Roll on December 2015.
You don't mean
No,
that.
I don't. But still, it's exciting for a lot of people,
well,
I get it.
Well, I say roll on December 2015.
Yes, you do.
Partially because I want to see the new stars, and also because it comes out on my birthday. So
it's good for you.
The stars have aligned for Niall.
They really have. I say it's a film you go in with as much expectation as any other.
Yes.
This is my film critic voice, and that is it.
I went into the original prequel trilogy with huge expectations.
More folio?
Yeah.
Oh, good lord, that was more
folio. Empire 5-star reviews aside, it is not.
I still remember they gave 5 stars to Attack of the Clones. I fell asleep at Attack of the Clones.
I hated it.
So I don't blame you. I hate it too.
I didn't even watch the last one. I haven't even seen the last one.
Oh, you need to.
No, I don't.
I do.
No, I don't.
Revenge of the Sith is a slight improvement on the first two. It is.
I just got so tired of the whole thing. Maybe I'll watch it one day for a bit.
The one thing I can say about this is, that I'm looking forward to is moving on from those prequels, it's not trying to fill any gaps in the story we already know. It's all new stuff. We're going to move forward. And plus, since George Lucas isn't writing, no more talk of younglings and hopefully no talk of midichlorians. Or tax. Tax in 3D in Phantom Menace. All the kids love that.
Well, also, one of the things that Star Wars has done, or Disney have done since they've bought Star Wars, is they've now confirmed that the expanded universe is not canon. It's no longer canon. So the books and all that have followed on from the original trilogy, they are no longer considered canon. This is going to be the start of the new canon. So...
I'm sure it's all very exciting for all you Star Wars people, but today I'm more excited about the new images from Justin Kurzel's version of Macbeth with Fassbender and Marion Cotillard. Marion Cotillard as Lady Macbeth. By God, that's going to be fantastic.
Michael Fassbender as Macbeth is just going to be awesome. He rocks a great beard.
Also, a new Terrence Davies movie is coming out, and the new films are released just today. Pictures are released just today.
And we won't be talking about that, Niall.
I don't know. But Peter Mullen in Scotland with Agnes Dane. A Terrence Davies movie. We're not talking about it. I mean, I'm scandalous.
You're talking about it right now.
Good.
Star Wars.
It's okay. We get it. Okay. It's fine.
News closer to home. It's been announced that The Canal, Ivan Kavanagh's new horror film that recently showed at the Tribeca Film Festival, has secured US distribution.
Huzzah!
This is the first film that has been taken. The Orchard is the name of the US film distribution company. This is the first time for one that they've taken on through their new Shock Till You Drop line, which is in association with the website. And it is it looks interesting.
Yeah.
It looks interesting that this is what they've chosen. I mean, it is very... it looks like it's an interesting film, and it went down a bomb at Tribeca, so... That's great news.
Yeah, indeed. And also, actually found out yesterday that The Stag has got a US release, a very limited US release, and video on demand release.
Yeah, it's called Bachelor Weekend.
The Bachelor Weekend, and it's got a great review in IndieWire. Really good review. It seems to be going over pretty well.
Yeah, but that's
Well done to all concerned. Well done to John Butler and to Ivan Kavanagh getting their distribution deals. We're delighted to see.
Yeah, the Aerosons continues.
Yes,
the Aerosons. Niall, are you still claiming copyright on that term?
I'm going to bring it into the cultural lexicon if it kills me.
We'll use it every week.
We'll remember that in the eulogy.
Following on from that, more news closer to home as well. Jim Sheridan, director Jim Sheridan, is bringing a Lockerbie drama to the big screen. Nice to see him do something other than to show up at every IFI event that there is.
he's like a permanent fixture now. He's part of the furniture.
He is. He's like the Oscar.
Indeed. Hello, the IFI.
Yes.
Especially its Oscar. His last film was Dream House, a ridiculous horror with Daniel Craig. So the only way is up. I look forward to seeing what he can do with this.
Closer to home for Jim Sheridan, I think the better.
Indeed.
I think at this point, and I'd want to see him do one of those Dublin films before he retires.
This is a historic drama.
Set
in Scotland. So.
It sounds interesting. And also it's an interesting subject.
It's tough material to work with, but I think he could certainly give it a good go.
It is good.
Come on, Jim. Let's bring it back home. Not the plane, obviously.
Or Pan Am, which is no longer with us.
Stop it.
No, I'm just saying Pan Am, the airline, is no longer with us. There was nothing contentious about that.
Moving on.
Spielberg is going to make the BFG.
Yay.
This is good news.
I like this. I actually surprisingly... I'm uncynical about this.
I'm okay with this.
I like Spielberg making kids' movies. This is a good move.
Tintin. Excuse me.
Tintin was not bad. I enjoyed Tintin.
Tintin is...
I'm sorry, I enjoyed it. As a fan of the comics, I have Tintin.
As a fan of the comics, I refuse to watch it.
And you're right.
No, I enjoyed it. I've been to the Tintin Museum in Brussels as well.
That's fine. It's wonderful.
Well, I feel left out. This is an exclusive club.
Are you a fan of Tintin? There you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, Linda Matheson, who wrote E.T., is back. And doing the script, so that's as much news as we have. It's the next film that he's going to make after the one with Tom Hanks, which is
the spy thriller
that he's going to make with Tom Hanks. So
it's not earth shattering,
But it's nice
but
to
it's
hear.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
But this just puts Robocalypse on the back burner again. So.
No harm. Like you, like we said last week, in the wake of Transcendence, this mightn't be the kind of material that's going to grab anybody.
Yeah. Just give it a bit of time.
The book is dreadful.
BFG?
No, Robocalypse.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Oh, no,
you scared me.
You were going to be kicked off this podcast.
It's Roald Dahl. You can't really go wrong with that material.
Oh, BFG's amazing.
Yeah.
As long, I think if Spielberg can just maybe watch the sentimental tendencies.
Yeah.
Not an easy ask, I know, but
I'm not watched the ending.
I really, really hope that they cast the real Queen of England. That would be quite the coup.
I don't think even Spielberg could pull that off.
Somebody suggested James Cromwell for the BFG.
Oh my goodness!
I mean,
how fantastic like, is that? I mean, that's done. You're done.
Top
that's
that. The guys,
is it not just going to be Andy Serkis?
Mocap. Please, yeah.
We want James Cromwell.
James Cromwell could do mocap. Just watch those knees, James. Let's see. Leave you fine.
James Cromwell does. That makes a lot of sense.
It does. It makes absolute sense to me.
That's just our pitch. I doubt Mr. Spielberg is listening. But if he
hello
is.
Hello to Mr. Spielberg.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Spielberg. Yes.
Or Senior Spielberg.
Or God, as he's known in my house. I'm sorry. Yes, Spielberg is my ultimate all time director. So.
Yes, with Schindler and I like peas in a pod. That's enough of that.
Yeah.
So the last bit of big news, and it is really, really big news.
It's also really, really bad news, potentially.
No, it could be, yeah. Zack Snyder has been confirmed as the director of the Justice League.
Oh, good grief.
Which is to follow on immediately after Batman vs. Superman, which is still not the real title of that film. And, and it's going to be the culmination of the DC universe in this trend. So after three movies, they will get to the Justice League, whereas... Marvel spent six films getting to the exact same point, so
and developed a universe as opposed to threw a universe at you.
Yeah, this whole thing is just the rate these announcements and the way that they come out from Warner Brothers. I smell desperation here.
Yeah,
just quick catch up. Okay, we're making all these films to catch up with Marvel. No, wait, no, we're not. We're just making the films. And look, here's Batman versus Superman. And quick, throw whoever the hell you want to cast in. And make Justice League. We're making Justice League next. I assure you, it's Justice League.
Well, it became increasingly evident in the last couple of weeks that Justice League was what they were doing. I mean, ever since they cast Wonder Woman, it's been on the cards. And then last week they cast Cyborg. So
okay, but couldn't they find another director? I'm sorry, but just after Man of Steel, I am still gobsmacked that they went with Snyder.
One of the things about Snyder's Man of Steel gave them $600 million. So
yeah, but you can't botch that job. Well, you tried.
$600 million, but that should be a billion. That is a botch. I mean, think about it. That is guaranteed.
Superman.
Exactly, it's Superman. It's an established name. It's a brand you can trade on very, very easily.
Yeah, well,
Look at it this way. An original idea, or even quasi-original, Chris Nolan's Inception. That got over $800 million worldwide. And that only got six?
Well, Inception is a significantly better film.
This is my point.
Yes, ergo, we're back to Zack Snyder.
Yes, indeed.
No, but I'm saying from a Warner perspective, there was bums in seats. The film made money.
But there could have been more bums in seats.
There
if they had been a better film.
Competent filmmaker.
Yeah.
Well, the man is a decent action director. He can frame a shot very well. He can frame action very well.
Can Michael Bay. Whoa.
Really?
You think?
No. But you know the point I'm making.
Yes, definitely.
He needs a solid script and he needs to be reined in by somebody as well in the higher echelons. Because when he got to make a film all on his own, it was Sucker Punch and it was dreadful. But given the right material, given the right... You know, he was working on a budget when he made 300. He was working on a budget when he made
Dawn of the Dead.
Which is his best film.
Yeah.
Still.
So he was working on very low budgets then. So he's working under pressure like that. This is going to be throwing money at him.
This is not going to help.
It's not. Them, it's going to be. It's all going to be excessive and action of just huge CGI blowout and. Me not caring.
And the thing of it is, when Marvel actually released the Avengers, you had a build up to what the Avengers were. You got the individual films. You got
they actually developed characters.
Yeah. So you get all the characters you liked into one film. You better believe people are going to run to see it.
Yeah.
This is just going to be
yoked together, and nobody will want it.
Well, what's going to be difficult is to sell the audience on some of the additional characters. So I mean, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman—they're all known. They're known to a wide stream audience. Cyborg is not.
I've never even heard of Cyborg.
Yeah, Green Lantern.
Well, yeah, see, the problem is, even with the known characters, yeah, they're known, but not as audiences may know them. I mean, Batman is Ben Affleck. He's not Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill, he's a new, relatively new guy on the scene.
Ben Affleck's a huge name, though.
No, yeah, but he's not the Batman we've had up until now.
People worry. People think Val Kilmer. Do you think George Clooney?
Yeah,
you don't know. You don't, until the film comes along. You don't know whether he's going to work.
As well as that, then Green Lantern, that was a big flop, and I know it's not going to be Ryan Reynolds, but again, you'll have to have someone else playing this role.
They're all familiar
with. Yeah. There's a chance with Green Lantern to go to skip Hal Jordan and move on to the next one to have to cast John Stewart. And one of the things that casting John Stewart will do is make a big black role. So it's a strong role for a different type of hero. Sure. We haven't had a black superhero.
For half a second, I actually imagined the other John Stewart. Exactly, the other John
Not
Stewart.
Not that John Stewart. No,
though that would be awesome.
That's fine, right? But if you said to me that the Warner were going to do a Green Lantern movie, another Superman sequel, which really should have got to establish the universe properly.
Yeah.
Maybe a reboot of Batman Furious Line, and then look at a Justice League movie where you're building, expanding out, and then doing it. I go, fair enough. But this just smacks them. Desperation.
It does.
Sorry,
it really does.
I don't see it.
You also have to have the Flash. He's very important to the Justice League, but his powers are somewhat similar to Superman's in the fastest man alive thing. They regularly have races to see which one of them is faster.
Oh dear! Just don't make them race around the planet, or else time will get reversed and we'll all age backwards or something. I don't know. Just it's depressing.
Benjamin Button was not in the original Superman movie.
Thank heavens, otherwise it would have been even worse. I really don't like Benjamin Button.
But,
it's okay.
No, Justice League it's important. It's a landmark for Warners. This is their thing. You know, they cannot drop the ball on this.
Well, they're going to. Yeah, they're already looks like they're setting themselves up to do just that. If it really is their big thing, they should have invested more time, more thought, more development into it.
It's going to happen anyway, right?
It is. And Batman vs.
Superman is going to make hundreds of millions.
Despite whether it's good or not.
Whether or not it's good, it is irrelevant. It's Batman and Superman together, and it will have a $200 million marketing campaign.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so confident. Like, it should make money because it's Batman and Superman, but...
But people are going to go. The curiosity factor alone will get
the whole thing just sounds kind of awful.
It's actually, forget desperation, this is lapsing into cynicism now.
Yeah.
It really is. And I'm sorry, but this is overkill. It really is. And between having to listen to that and Star Wars news for the next 18 to 24 months.
Star Wars news actually sounds refined and intelligent.
I suppose it does. At least it's a new cast. It's going in a new direction.
You know what they're about. They've got the right director in. They've got the right writers in. They seem to have got a good cast together. You can see what they're thinking. I don't see the thinking behind what Warners are doing.
Thinking?
The reason that the Marvel films are so successful is that under the Disney brand, Marvel is allowed to operate as an independent studio. The reason that LucasArts will work as well and that Pixar works is that Disney will allow those two, currently allows Pixar, but will allow LucasArts as well to operate as its own studio.
Truly the question is then, what the hell are Warner's doing?
DC go.
They've owned DC for 30 years now, and they still can't get their arse in gear to do anything other than Batman and Superman.
I think
that's insanity.
Yeah, and the worst part is, the Dark Knight trilogy did so well, they probably thought, right, look how that went, let's keep a hold on them. And just, oh.
Well, apparently, reports have it that there's currently nine DC comic movies in the pipeline at Warner's, right?
I want to see some of those cut back when one of them sucks.
So, Batman vs. Superman being one, Justice League being two.
Sure.
Then we also have the Joseph Gordon-Levitt's version of The Sandman, which is based on a DC comic by Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
Then we have a rumored Wonder Woman film.
That'll be whether this will do.
They're talking about a film based on Shazam, which is the rebranded Captain Marvel, because you can't call him Captain Marvel anymore.
Shazam comes to me as like, oh, there's a song. I want to get the song. What's that song?
No, Shazam is the story of a little kid who visits a wizard and gets powers. And
Shazam. For a second there, I thought...
called Shazam.
When you said Shazam, originally, the first thing that came to mind was Kazam, that got off a Shaquille O'Neal movie. No, oh, dear, I don't need that.
Shazam could work very well, because Shazam is one of the best bad guys in it.
Okay.
Called Black Adam, and he could be a very good on screen. That'd be nice. Then there's also Metal Man, 100 Bullets, and Fables in work. And then they also own Preacher, and then they may or may not make DMZ, Scalped, American Vampire, and The Wake. So they're vertical titles.
I wouldn't mind seeing Preacher, except I'd say they'd bottle it. Just also, like they bottle Constantine.
Yeah. Also, my issue with that is they all sound like Guardians of the Galaxy to me. In the sense like that cunts. It's like, what are they? Yeah. Like, what is it? Whereas the Guardians of the Galaxy can exist because they've already done all of these. They've had success after success after success.
Yeah.
They can take a chance at something, throw it out there.
Yeah.
Marvel are smart in that regard.
Area where Warners are very strong and they know what they're doing with the DC brand is in animation. So the Batman animated series was brilliant. The Superman animated series was brilliant as well. They also have done the Justice League animated series, Justice League Unlimited, was very good too. And they've done a number of animated films. So the best version of the Green Lantern is by far and away Green Lantern First Flight, which is an animated one. Then they've also done animated Justice League movies. There's recently been a quite spectacular Batman one called Son of Batman. Brian did a review for the site. It only came out last week. So they're all, in animation, they know what they're doing. So take those guys and put them in charge of the studio films.
Somebody stop Zack Snyder.
Look what Brad Bird did with Mission Impossible 4. An animation director can make a really good action film.
Although there's also risks that they could be like Andrew Stanton and make John Carter.
Carter is not a bad film.
Yes,
it's just
it
not
is.
A
it's
good
a very, can we, very
bad. Can we just, sorry, I want a moratorium on the already re-evaluation of John Carter of Mars and Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
They may not be the bombs everybody's talking about, but they're not good.
No, okay.
Sorry,
no,
I'm
not
sick
good,
of hearing this. Everybody says this. So they're not
as they were made out to be.
No, but that doesn't. They're not good, though. And a lot of people keep saying they're good. And
oh God!
I'm sorry,
good
they're
grief.
Not.
The last 20 minutes of Lone Ranger is good.
Yeah, but they threw how much money at it. They bloody well should be.
Oh yeah, no, but that sequence.
Yeah,
with the
and I agree. It's a great sequence, and it takes you back to a kind of.
But this brings us back to our original point. All this money. All these resources being thrown at something that just probably will not work.
It'll probably make money though.
Oh, it'll definitely.
Oh, and isn't that just the bottom line?
Of course,
it is. But it
is. That's the sad thing.
I weep for the art of.
It is for the bottom line, but I would argue that Marvel, the movies Marvel make, there's more thought goes into it.
And they deserve.
You can understand the success because they actually seem to be wanting to try to put something together that both works in as a really good film and makes money. They don't always succeed, but at least they're trying.
Indeed.
And I think that's it.
So box office top 10 time, and we're going to start as per usual at number 10.
Yes.
At number 10 and still in the charts and just clutching on to the bottom of the list is Divergent, the Neil Burger adaptation of the Veronica Roth novel.
Right. Bye then. Nice having you.
I think we've said all we need to say about that.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there. Good man.
Yeah, but it's gone next week. Easily.
But before it leaves, it will hit 500,000, so that's not bad.
No.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think they probably expected better.
Yeah.
They're not getting Hunger Games money. But,
certainly not.
So at 9, another one of these rare oddities in the charts is when...
Pleasant Surprise.
Oh, yeah. A Met opera is back in the charts, or not a new one. It's Così Fan Tutte is in. It was exhibited at 11 different places. So,
and that's good enough for 9th place, 32,000.
Yeah,
fairly decent screen average.
Well, the third highest per location average of the week. So that's quite
closer.
Impressive. Yes, it's nice to see that.
Yeah, isn't it, though?
It restores the faith, etc., etc.
And also, it restores me, the snobby, cultured, cynical one of the group.
Are you saying we're not cultured? Is that that's what you're referring
to? Over-cultured. Snob. I'm the snob.
See, yogurt is cultured, too, but if you leave it out for too long, it'll sour. Right?
Exactly.
So, this is what's happened to Jason. He's just gone sour.
This is true. I am yogurt.
Yeah, but it's great, because, we had 20 minutes of blah, 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 Marvel and Justice League and whatever, and suddenly, Così Fan Tutte.
Yes.
Obviously,
we didn't see it because it's opera, but still, I'm glad it's there.
Yeah, no, I'm not in either. Opera, no. Unless it's Aida, and then I'll go see that. At 8 is Transcendence in its first official release week. It still hasn't screened for critics, Brian went to go see it, and he says it's appalling.
It's dead in the water, isn't it?
It is absolutely dead in the water. Its first official week of release, it got less than 65,000. It's a dud.
It looks like when a film is fairly successful and it's on the 6th or 7th week and it has that number 10, 34,000 week, you know, that has that look about it, and it's only in its first week.
Yeah, that is really bad. It might get 100,000 at the end of it all, but that's bad.
The distributors who are entertainment film distributors, they didn't screen it, but also they seem to lose faith in it before it ever went out.
The reviews came out in the States first, and it just tanked there. And it's doing the same here, and at this rate, it will be lucky to make back even its budget worldwide.
Lowest opening figures for any Johnny Depp film. So that's...
I think it's Prozar theory from last week. His pulling power as a star has waned.
Well, just to say that when Dark Shadows came out, it made 6 times this amount.
And that was his lowest up to that point?
Well, no, it wasn't, because that god-awful thing, The Tourist,
was...
It's just dreadful.
Could Transcendence be worse than The Tourist?
As a film? Probably, but as a... Yeah, at the box office too. Jesus, that'd be...
Wow, that's while you're back to cinematography.
And this was the film that he chose to make, because he passed on The Fighter.
Really?
He had the opportunity to make The Fighter as his debut directorial feature.
Oh,
and
he really should have, because apart from actually making potentially a good film with a good script, he would also have stepped out of Chris Nolan's shadow, because this just sounds like something that Chris Nolan would have made on the worst of bad days.
There was rumors that Nolan was interested in this to begin with.
And presumably
they read the script.
I think those rumors were put out by the film company to sort of boost interest in it. Yeah, but he's an executive producer on it. So technically speaking, they could have called it Christopher Nolan's Transcendence.
Until he made a phone call and told them not to on the plane, I would imagine. That's what I would have done.
Yeah, roll on Interstellar, eh? And even then, we'll be wary.
So Act 7 is a significantly better blockbuster, one that was actually made with a script.
Yes, always helps.
That's Captain America: Winter Soldier.
5th week of release. It's over 1.25 million in the Irish box office.
Pretty good.
Not bad. They'll be Disney happy with those numbers, I've no doubt. It
8%
might hang
drop
on
as well, which is pretty good.
That is a good hold at this rate in its release. Might see it in the top 10 again next week. We'll see.
Yeah, we see. Last week was because it was Easter, the figures were down. So this is just a sort of readjustment back to the norm.
Okay.
So that's why the drops are so small for some of the bigger films. So at 6th is Darren Aronofsky's Noah.
Hey.
Still hanging in there.
It is, and doing actually all right. It had a 26% drop on last week, which is pretty good going. It's on course for 800,000 to the Irish box office. I don't think it'll make 850.
It might.
It'll be close.
Yeah.
Still okay.
It is. That's actually for quite good numbers for the film that is as barking as it is. And we've said all this
barking,
before. I'm just glad it's doing so well. People will embrace this kind of stuff. Well done, audience.
Yes.
At number 5 and up 61% on last weekend, in its 5th release week.
Boo, audience.
Bad audience.
Muppets Most Wanted.
Oh, dear.
Up 61%. I know it's Easter and all, but good.
It's also the last weekend of the kids' Easter holidays.
Yeah, true.
Which also explains number 4.
Scraped over the million quid mark. I really, really wished it did.
It's made a million. It's done very well with the Irish box. It's nice to see Muppets
stuff
being
good,
embraced
though.
By a new audience, by a young
That's
audience.
True.
Why can't they embrace a better film then?
Yes.
At 4, and also for the kids, and up 85%.
Wow.
So
that's a significant rise.
It's just
isn't
crazy
it?
that increase. It's Rio 2. So
And
that has made it's made just short of 900,000 the Irish box office so far.
Yeah, so that will also pass the million.
It will do. Mm.
So and between those two, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, which made more than a million, and the Lego Movie, which made 3.25 million.
Bumper,
animation's having some year.
It is. It really is. And we still have more to come.
Yeah, we still have How to Train Your Dragon to come.
That's going to be huge.
Yes.
Absolutely huge.
I'll be there.
And another film that crossed the million.
Oh, yes. And it's great to see an Irish film making more than a million, making €1,171,211.
Not only that, though, it doesn't look like it's going to stop for a little while either.
Yeah. No, it's going to be with us for a while.
It has legs.
Yep, and that's also good. It's good for the industry that Calvary is doing.
Good for the industry.
Well.
Not a great film, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We may have mentioned this before.
Why, Jay, you have opinions on this? Tell us more. Afterwards.
We're going to stop now, thanks.
Yes.
Act 2, and in its opening week, so the highest new entry of the week, is the comedy.
you use that term loosely.
Yeah, well, it's done well, so obviously the audience have found it. It's Nick Cassavetes, The Other Woman.
Nick Cassavetes. Nothing says...
Wow, the apple fell far from the tree, didn't it?
So...
No, Max Spielberg's Jaws 17.
This has done well. It's got over 300,000 in its opening weekend, but there's a reason for that. It's a film that, I don't want to be accused of any kind of sexism, this is just the way it is. It's got three leading ladies in it. It's a comedy, a rom-com. It's aimed at the female audience. And when you look at the rest of the top 10, there are very few films that are catering for those.
It stands out on its own in that regard.
It's plugging a gap in the market. It is a lucrative one.
It is very much aimed at the female market, but also it is it's disingenuous to that market because it's...
Oh, it's failed the...
Yeah, it fails the Bechdel test.
And it's really...
as a scientific measure, the Bechdel test is not a measure of anything necessarily. I mean, it's just something someone came up with.
It's interesting, but
the fact that people keep referring to it as if it is some kind of a set-in-stone measure of something, I find ridiculous.
Yeah, but how can a film with three leading ladies fail the Bechdel test? That's an interesting question. Yeah,
that is a good point. Bad scripting?
Yeah,
lack of characters? Even though that is the basic plot, these three women find out the same guy, one of them, whom is married to them, is just, they're trying to get revenge. And it is kind of the crux of the plot, but the fact that they can't even find time to not talk about the guy. Yeah, that
for
is.
For two goddamn minutes.
I'm not a fan of the Bechdel test, but here it is a good, I suppose, just prove a point.
It is staggering. But what's interesting about The Other Woman is how successful it's been compared to a superior rom-com in The Notebook. So it's made more at the box office than The Notebook did.
The Notebook is a rom-com.
It's a romantic drama then.
It's a Nick Cassavetes movie. That's the biggest comparison, I suppose.
And that bloody writer, what's his name?
Nicholas Sparks.
Rolling them out.
All Nicholas Sparks films are exactly the same.
The posters for Nicholas Sparks movies are all the same. Cup her in your hands.
Here's a guy sanding down a boat with a dog in the rain. That is a Nicholas Sparks film.
Not aimed at me, alas.
It's only a matter of time for that gag raid his head again. Yeah. Hi, Jay.
Usually in the top 10.
Why are you here? Nothing's aimed at you.
It may have been aimed at me.
Mind you, The Other Woman and The Notebook were not aimed at me either.
No.
So, yeah,
it is funny, though. What friend of the site, Gavin Burke, came up with a very good quote that he found in Marianne Johnson's review of The Other Woman. She said, and this is brilliant, "We need an equivalent term to Uncle Tom for a woman who participates in Hollywood's systematic hatred of women."
Oh, that's pretty good.
Mm.
That says it all, really. Yeah. I mean, that's, if a film aimed at women is also disrespectful to that audience, that's...
But if people go see it, that's the problem.
Well, people went to see a Sex and the City movie, and that also was...
Yeah. But there is history in that in the context of the show, which wasn't as patronizing.
But we will always and forever love Sex and the City 2 for the Mark Kermode.
Right? Yes.
Oh, that was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
So at number one and holding on to the top spot is The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which has done remarkable business. It's made $1.176 million in 12 days of opening, so almost $100,000 per day.
Good work. The 2 million mark?
Oh, easily, yeah. But it'll get to 2 million before Godzilla hits, and that's the key. It has no
real competition
in that particular market, in that
big action
type market. This week, Pompeii's out, but it won't.
Yeah, I wouldn't lose any sleep, Spidey.
No, indeed not.
Yeah, so Spidey staying at the top, but it will not be there next week. Probably won't be there next week.
Never know.
The reason being, and we're going to move on to what's out next week, is that Bad Neighbors is out on Saturday, and I expect this to do very big business.
It comes out on Saturday,
which means that's losing out on the Friday box office, so it'll have to do all of its business in 2 days. But since Spidey will probably drop another 30%, it'll be below 200,000. Bad Neighbors could be above 200,000. So.
One thing I've noted about this, just looking at Bad Neighbors, it's getting released in the US, and it's getting solid reviews.
Yeah, I'm hearing very good things. I'm going to see it tomorrow. So, but it seems to be doing well. Mm. And the summer always gets one breakout comedy. This could be it.
Mm. The only thing I'll say about it is it looks dreadful to me, but I'll be surprised.
I'd like to see Rose Byrne in a good film. She deserves one.
She certainly does, and I don't know, I can't think of anyone that really sticks in my mind. Bridesmaids,
First Class?
No. The closest I can think of is a tie.
Oh, no. The closest I can think of is a bad guy. Kevin Bacon.
The closest I can think of is either Bridesmaids or Insidious. Yeah, she does need a good movie.
She does.
Yeah, she Bridesmaids is good. Cool.
Bridesmaids is okay.
Yeah, it's good.
It's decent.
Yeah.
It's certainly more... it's certainly less patronizingly written than, say, The Other Woman. It's a decent rom-com aimed at that audience, but
yes.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like, to me, like The Hangover, but, you know, with women.
That's Bridesmaids, yeah, no. But anyway, Bad Neighbors, it's promises Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne, have a couple that have a newborn baby, and they live next door to a frat house frequented by Zac Efron.
Oh dear, a frat house frequented by Zac Efron. I'm sure there have been a few of those.
Nicely done. There's plenty of opportunities for Zac Efron to take off his shirt, and apparently during the filming of it, he was constantly taunting Seth Rogen with his shirtlessness.
Yeah, but I have no doubt Seth Rogen, given half a chance, he could snap him like a twig. I don't know why, I just like to imagine.
Because you've seen Green Hornet and you know how good he is.
No, I actually haven't seen The Green Hornet. Yeah, so and you can't make me.
It's Michel Gondry.
Yeah, it's also supposed to be not good.
It's still a not good Michel Gondry.
Yeah, I love Michel Gondry. Bonjour à Michel Gondry. Anyway.
Yes, moving on from Bad Neighbors a smaller release, but probably the best film to come out next week, unless Bad Neighbors turns out to be absolutely brilliant, but I'll know tomorrow, is Blue Room. Jeremy Saulnier.
It's we all saw this at the Dublin Film Festival,
yes,
and we're all quite impressed. Revenge thriller, which doesn't really do anything new with that genre, but what it does well.
Style. Very, very stylish. Very well put together.
Very stylized violence.
Very violent.
Excessively violent.
Very atmospheric. Very well done.
It is.
Great lead performance by...
Macon Blair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
He's marvelous.
Yeah, he is.
Because he's a very taciturn guy, so you're spending a lot of time just watching his movements, and it's good.
Best part of the film was probably the first half an hour. It's almost wordless, really quiet, beautifully shot.
Yeah,
it's all about establishing character,
And it does it very, very well.
It does.
Doesn't quite pull off the ending.
It gets a bit Skyfall-y, Home Alone-y,
and then it aims for a kind of philosophical grandeur to it, and that doesn't quite.
No, it tries it.
Oh, it does.
I admire it for trying.
It looks stunning throughout.
Very well shot. Absolutely. It's a very promising debut for Jeremy Saulnier.
As a calling card, I want to see more of his films.
Absolutely. I mean, again, a fine revenge thriller. Again, surprisingly violent.
Yeah.
But
a testament to Middle America as well. It is very much of its place.
Absolutely.
No recommendation.
I will say this, actually, just as regards the violence. And this is something that came up with The Rage 2 as well, when people were saying, oh, but it's so violent. I don't mind a film that can show some bloodshed when that is put in a realistic context.
Yeah.
You shoot someone in the head, there's going to be blood. Stab someone, there is going to be blood.
That's it.
So at least there's films that are acknowledging that.
Yeah, contextual violence is welcome compared to the sort of CG mod, the 300 type violence where nobody really seems to get injured yet everyone dies. It's
I agree.
It's a significant improvement.
Yeah, and it's a 16 rated film, so it's not violent enough to get the 18. So.
Yeah. Whereas the Raid 2 was.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, well, with good reason.
Yeah, definitely. Hammer Girl.
Yes, the Hammer Girl that no one got that. So also out this week is one of Paul Walker's last films, which is a remake of a French film. It's called Brick Mansions.
Remake of District 13.
Yeah, District 13 is just all right film. It's not.
It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
It's no deeper than that, though.
No. And not, as many suspected, in any way related to District 9, which is a significantly better film.
But did it need remaking?
No, it did not need remaking. And this has all the hallmarks of a straight-to-video film, but was released because of what happened to Paul Walker.
It's the cheapest looking poster I've ever seen.
Yes, indeed.
It's even a CGI for in the poster. That's a remarkable achievement.
It's
horrible to look at. It actually offended my eyes.
Mm, mm.
Chances are this is the kind of movie that you may watch on a Sunday afternoon if it happens to be on and you're doing nothing else.
Or I may not.
I may have a sleep or read a book.
Or you're on a plane and you only have the one channel.
I may sleep or read a book.
So I may do the same.
Also out this week is Pompeii. I just have to skip over the smaller ones and move around Pompeii.
Yeah, Pompeii, you know what you're going to get.
It's Kit Harington's first starring role away from Game of Thrones, so it's interesting to see what
he knows nothing, Jon Snow.
Did you see the picture where he met Jon Snow?
I did indeed, and I kept seeing it because it kept being retweeted into my timeline on many, many occasions.
But it was funny.
It was funny. Yeah. I did laugh the first few times.
So Pompeii, which is Paul W.S. Anderson, the less good Paul Anderson.
They're playing in different sports.
Different sports. They're in different dimensions.
One man made Magnolia, the other man made Resident Evil. This is the one that made Resident Evil.
Oh, good night. And of all the ones to retell the Pompeii story, I'd love to see P.T. Anderson retell Pompeii.
That'd be fantastic.
Wouldn't it, though?
This has got Kiefer Sutherland in it, though. So,
Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
There we go. Yeah, I knew I'd have it.
All right, hang on. Can anybody name me the last good film Kiefer Sutherland was in?
Young Guns.
I was actually going to say Dark City, but if you want to go back to Lost Boys, you can. Yeah, he's not a guarantee of anything.
But...
He's a guarantee that terrorists will not attack U.S. soil.
It's true.
No terrorist has attacked U.S. soil since 24 went on the air.
I can't believe you just made that comparison. My God, this is
distasteful. I can see there's a kind of a awful attraction to the idea of just going to the cinema and watching Pompeii burn.
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't it? There is a kind of like, all right, just hit me with the...
It's the reason you go to a Roland Emmerich film.
The problem with Pompeii is, right, you do get the destruction of the town when the volcano erupts. But before that, you have a sub-Titanic plot which involves a poor guy falling in love with a rich girl, this corrupt senator played by Kiefer Sutherland, and it's all... Mishing in itself in an unnecessary. We just want to see destruction.
I will say, I've been to the actual Pompeii, and there's a lot of brothels. So, you know, there could be fun to be had there if they go down that road. I suspect he probably won't.
One of the things about this film is it's got Emily Browning as the girl. She also needs to get a new casting agent.
She does. She was in the aforementioned Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
She was in that terrible remake of Tale of Two Sisters, The Uninvited. She was in
Sleeping Beauty, which is an interesting film, but not a good film.
That's a strange, strange film.
And she's, but she can be brilliant. She was very, very good when she was younger in Lemony Snicket, the series of Unfortunate Events.
That is actually not a bad kids film. I like it.
I like it as well.
So I'd like to see Emily Browning, break away from this. This is just rubbish.
Yeah,
it's entertaining rubbish, but it's rubbish nonetheless.
You know it's rubbish
going
in. It's
a bad Gladiator film mixed with Roland Emmerich. It's Spartacus Blood and Sand
on the big screen.
On the big screen,
with explosions.
One big explosion at least.
Yes, you would hope.
Let's see what else is that we have. Ilo Ilo out this weekend. Singaporean drama. It's directed by Anthony Chen. It was a prize winner at the London Film Festival last year. Got very good reviews about the relationship between a young maid arrived in Singapore from China and her ward, a young boy. It's a commentary on the recession in Asia at the moment, as well as a tense family drama. And it's getting excellent reviews all over, so that's almost definitely one to see. It'll definitely be better than Pompeii, anyway.
Yeah, so that's something to pop along down to the IFI to have a look.
Also, out this week, Run and Jump.
Yes, the Irish drama with Will Forte in the lead.
I don't want to see this, actually. Yeah, this
it looks pretty interesting. Yeah, Maxine Peake playing a wife of a man who is stricken by a stroke. Yeah, and Will Forte plays the doctor who is helping in his recuperation, but they start forming a bond, and will they, won't they? Well, who knows? But it sounds a bit grittier, but a bit more substantial than most Irish comedies that get a cinematic release.
Yeah, and I do like Will Forte. He was fantastic in Nebraska.
He was
the centre of the glue of the whole film, I thought.
Absolutely.
And he's MacGruber, which is awesome.
There is that.
There is that.
But yeah, no, this looks interesting. It's getting solid reviews elsewhere, and yeah, it looks like something to watch. Also is the quite appalling Tarzan. So we sent Brian along to this, and Brian is a martyr.
He is a martyr.
He went to see it. He didn't like it. But Kellan Lutz was in Dublin promoting it recently, so it's got that.
Kellan Lutz, he was in that, and he was also in Rennie Harlan's Hercules film.
Yeah.
He's having a good year, isn't he?
I've watched that Hercules, it's dreadful.
I haven't, because I won't.
Every minute that I was watching it, I wished I was watching Gladiator instead. Every minute. It's just dreadful. But yeah, Tarzan is also dreadful. It's a 3D animated version aimed at the kids.
It should do something, though, shouldn't it?
It's the oldest story imaginable, isn't it? It's been done to death.
I'd like to see a new Tarzan film an interesting take on it. Like, Greystoke was pretty good. I like Greystoke. Christopher Lambert, I loved it. It was great. At least it was trying to do justice to the story and make it more interesting.
We also have the Japanese anime Paterna Inverted, which played very well here at the Japanese Film Festival. So I'm looking forward to checking out. I didn't get a chance at the Japanese Film Festival. But.
So out is A Thousand Times Good Night, which I will almost definitely go to see because it has Juliette Binoche. Now, if you're like me, you need no other reason. But it also has Nikolai Coster-Waldau, so there's another plus.
Yeah, but he's in Gutter Woman.
Oh, fair point. Fair point, sir.
He's going to be stressed thin this week.
Running between screens and dreams.
Yeah. It's about a photojournalist played by Binoche who is sent to, well, he travels to a lot of war-torn regions, but it quite adversely affects her home life, in particular her relationship with her daughter. Her daughter, incidentally, is played by Lauren Canney, who played Steph in Amber.
Yeah, she's got a number of movies coming out.
She does.
She looks like she's on the rise, which is great to see.
Indeed. And hello to Paul Dwan, by the way.
Hello, Paul.
As always.
So also out this week is Plastic, which is it has got an absolutely dreadful tagline called Hustle Heist Repeat. So Will Poulter's in it. I like Will Poulter, so that's always good.
Yeah, I still remember him in Son of Rambo. What a sweet little film that is.
Yes, I like that.
British drama, comedy / drama, I say it's more drama than comedy. Sam and Forde run a credit card fraud scheme, but when they steal from the wrong man, they find themselves threatened by a sadistic gangster, and they need to raise $5 million and pull off a daring diamond heist to clear their debt.
You make that sound so compelling.
Yeah, no, it just sounds awful.
Yeah, it does.
I'd say go see something else.
Of the films that are out at the moment, my recommended one would still be Living in a Coded Land, but it's only playing for another couple of days.
Blue Room.
It probably will be out, but it will be gone. Gone by the time this actually is out. So
did make top 10 last.
Alas.
No, and also Locke dropped out as well, which is unfortunate, because Locke is remarkably good.
It's really good.
Moving on, we're going to look at the 20th Century Fox releases for the rest of this year.
Our latest in our series.
Yes, and
studio.
Another of the big studios. So they're starting off very strongly. I mean, they've got the other woman came out last week, but they're from now on. They're starting off very strongly with Enemy.
Can't wait.
So this is Denis Villeneuve's movie that he made before Prisoners, also starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It is a study of a guy who finds his doppelganger. He's watching TV one day and he sees a guy on the TV who's exactly the same as him.
So it's the double, but not the double.
It's the double, but better.
I'm hoping it's better than the double. I'm hoping it's better than Prisoners, too, incidentally.
It is better than Prisoners.
Good.
It is very, very good. I really enjoyed Enemy. It is a very interesting film. It's full of sort of... There's a recurring motif of a spider in it that I still don't understand, and I need more people to have seen this film.
I will. Can't wait.
That's strong. And then a week later is what I'm sure Fox is hoping will be their cash cow for the year.
Yeah.
Is the Bryan Singer's return to the X-Men franchise, Days of Future Past.
Right. Sidestepping Bryan Singer here. I'm not particularly looking forward to this because, well, first of all, didn't care for X-Men First Class.
Neither did I.
And the problem with X-Men is, well, it's not a problem in the right hands. And Bryan Singer probably is the right hands, but it's a lot of characters to juggle. And when they don't all have their own setups, like, you know, Marvel has given all its members of the Avengers, say. But trying to juggle all these characters, and yeah, we've seen some of them in the past, but now you're talking about a plot that involves time travel. It sounds complicated to me. I'm not a comic book nerd, so you're probably more confident in this than I am, but I'm not getting my hopes up here.
I'm a big fan of the storyline. I really enjoyed the Days of Futures Past storyline, which sees the future X-Men, or the ones that exist post The Last Stand, that incarnation of them, threatened by... the Sentinels are there, and the Sentinels have turned onto human population as well as on the mutant population. So these are gigantic killer robots whose sole purpose of... So the reason to exist was to wipe out mutants, but they have now taken to wiping out the rest of humanity as well.
As you do.
And the X-Men are facing a losing battle and decide to send Wolverine back in time to inhabit his earlier body and convince the Magneto and Professor X to get together, join the bands together, and fight them from an earlier point in history.
Right. I prefer the getting everybody together to fight a common enemy when it was X-Men 2. And again, time travel.
Time travel done right can be good fun. I mean, to the Future 2.
Yeah, but now, that's Back to the Future. That's the ultimate.
This is traveling back within your own timeline, like Back to the Future 2 does, you know?
So, yeah,
Back to the Future 1 does as well.
Yeah, but the rest of the X-Men universe is... Okay, of course, you have mutants, which is, very much out of the ordinary, but it's still based within a set time period, you know. It's very much set in the 60s in the case of X-Men First Class, or it's very, very much set in the now. Or you're trying to convince us that you can go back and forth. I don't know. It just sounds sounds like a step too far for me.
One of the things it offers is a chance to see some of that. Because one of the things, if you're an X-Men fan, if you're a fan of the comic books, is you have your own favorites. There's certain characters that you like, and they may not have yet been represented on screen. And so some of them are coming. So like Bishop is a fan favorite, and he's coming. He's in X-Men Days of Future Past. Quicksilver is also in X-Men Days of Future Past, and in The Avengers, which can be very confusing.
Good Lord, don't do that to me. I've enough struggling to get my head around one section, but it makes it...
So we're looking at a total cast of characters in excess of 20, terms of...
Ooh. That's just astonishing.
Yeah, because we'll have two versions of Magneto, two versions of Professor X, two versions of Beast, two versions of...
Oh, good Lord.
You know, so you're going...
Is Kelsey Grammer back?
Well, rumor has it that, there are certain characters back. Kelsey Grammer being back would be nice with Beast in the proper...
I must have Kelsey Grammer back. He was perfect as
in
Beast.
In the proper Days of Future Past timeline, he... has sadly passed, or he...
oh, dear God!
Many of them have. Many of the X-Men have died in the Days of Future, the comic book Days of Future Past...
This is depressing me now.
...timeline, and resetting it post the Days of Future Past action has them all back alive again.
Are you basically telling me I have to wait for the Expendables 3 to get a Kelsey Grammer fix? X-Men.
Well, see, the thing about,
oh, god damn it!
The thing about the X-Men Days of Future Past is that it will lead into possibly the biggest story in the X-Men universe, which is Age of Apocalypse, which is going to come straight after it. So, that's it. Age of Apocalypse should have been built up to. And to springboard immediately after Days of Future Past into Age of Apocalypse is a... That could be their Justice League. That could be the X-Men the universe's step too far. Because there's a lot of setting up in the Age of Apocalypse storyline. You have to introduce Mr. Sinister. You have to introduce the... Or you may just skip straight past him. But you have to introduce Apocalypse as well as a character. And you have to introduce the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So you have to turn Angel into Archangel. Oh, there's a lot of building to be done, and it's not...
Let me ask you a question, though. Should X-Men Days of Future Past not succeed in the way that 20th Century Fox hope it does?
Very unlikely.
Is there...
It's already greenlit.
Oh, they've already...
They've already greenlit Age of Apocalypse, so it's going straight in.
It all sounds very muddled,
doesn't it?
The only blip on that radar is that Bryan Singer is attached to direct Age of Apocalypse, and
we'll see how long that lasts.
There is that. Mm. So, but following on from Days of Future Past and a much more smaller film that's coming out on the 20th Century Fox calendar is Belle, which is Jessica Finley Brown starring the story of a young woman back in the 19th century. It looks nice to play the Sundance.
Well, her last film was A New York Winter's Tale, so it can't be but a step up from that.
Yeah.
It involves the illegitimate daughter of a Royal Navy admiral, but she's mixed race.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, pretty controversial back in the day. So it sounds like an interesting story. As you say, it looks quite nice, so it'll depend on whether it goes more, if it opts more to show the harshness, the controversial side of it, or, ooh, look at the pretty costumes.
Yeah, it definitely has the feel of a Merchant Ivory in its look. So those films have their audience. They look quite well.
Sure.
So it did okay at Sundance, so I'm interested to see how it goes with Belle.
Yeah. The lead is played by Ugo Mbatha-Raw. It also stars Matthew Good, Emily Watson, Miranda Richardson. Boy, just saying that cast, I kind of want to see this now. Looks... Tom Wilkinson, I'm there.
Yeah, good enough. More than good enough.
The Debt.
Beg your pardon?
The Debt.
What's wrong with The Debt?
Yeah, it's only okay. Tom Wilkinson is not good enough.
I like that film and you know why.
Yeah, of course I know why. You don't have a thing
You're
for
shameful. You
know, certain shameful red-headed film. Actresses or anything.
I can't meet that woman. You know this now. I just can't. Hello to Jessica Chastain, by the way.
On June 20th is one that Fox are plugging quite a lot at the moment. And I can understand why. This is their young adult novel type idea, but not dystopian future type thing. This is proper drama. This is a story of two cancer sufferers that find love. Isn't it cancer? They're definitely
One of them has cancer. The other one has a prosthetic leg.
Oh, okay. So, and it's called The Fault in Our Stars. So it's Shailene Woodley, who is a properly solid talent, and Ansel Elgort, who has a dreadful name.
But I've never heard of.
Also,
he's her co-star from Divergent, and he's also in the remake of Carrie. Great star.
Fine
there.
CV.
He was fine in Carrie now. So, I mean, Carrie has its issues, but the central cast was not one of them.
Hmm.
The ending was definitely one.
Don't tell me, I haven't seen it. I might.
Have you seen the original?
Yeah, of course I've seen the original.
Right, then you know how it ends.
Oh, Christ. And what's the problem with that?
It's exactly the same.
Oh, how lazy is that?
But less good.
Oh, well, of course. The original is so good. Yeah. I don't know. Wasn't there another film like this out recently enough with Dakota Fanning? Now it's good. It sounds similar enough. She was a cancer sufferer, she falls in love, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And this just sounds like another version of that.
Pretty much, but this one looks to be an improvement on that, because that was dreary. That was...
Also, I'm just looking it up here, two reasons to be optimistic about this, Laura Dern and Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, always good.
Always good.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to The Fault in Our Stars.
Are we?
Well, Amanda on our team is very much looking forward to it, so I'm hopeful that
Hello the
film
will
be good. Hello to Amanda, yes. Then, the film that I'm most looking forward to
and the thing is,
I'm also looking forward to the X-Men Days of Future Past and the film that will come after this one, but it is How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Bring it.
Yes.
I must see it.
I liked the first one, not as much as everyone else, but it is still quite
good. You're wrong, because it's great.
I like it! What do you want from me?
I want you to love it.
Aside from Wrangle, easily the best soundtrack of an animated film in recent years.
Again, that John Powell score. I've cited it before and I'll cite it again, but look it up.
That score is just amazing. It's such a good, fun film.
It's great fun. Compared to other animated films that Fox and studios that aren't Pixar have put out, it's not as cynical. It's not at all pop culture driven.
Oh, well, it benefits
and
from that.
It does, and the character design is a bit more rounded, and it's not as harsh and. It has a lot more heart.
He's the cutest dragon ever.
Now, I don't know if dragons should be cute, but he is. I don't care. He is.
Give him time.
He could be Smaug one day.
So we're really looking forward to seeing that.
Yes, it
follows on directly after the second one, but they're older now, and so this Burke is now populated with dragons. They're quite used to it, The storyline centers around a mysterious dragon rider, and the thing is, the trailer and a lot of the promo material has given away who that is in relation to the central character. And
I haven't seen any of it.
Is why I don't bring it up. This is why I'm not going to spoil it. It's disappointing that they've gone that route. So then 2 weeks later,
this is one I am looking forward to. I have no hesitation in saying.
Massive release from Fox, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Now, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It sounded like a film that wasn't necessary. But I don't know what I want anymore. Shaky opening aside, and so a little bit of dialogue. That's a cracker of a summer film. It's entertaining. It just goes at like the clappers. It's a lot of fun.
I had some problems with it, quite a few.
Yeah.
But by the time the film, the end credits roll, I wanted more.
Yeah.
And in rare do films do that. It's actually quite rare that you go, like, give me some more of that. I want some more of that now.
Yeah.
Can we have another hour, 40 minutes of that, please?
Yeah. So, like I say, a shaky start, but then once it hits its stride, there's no stopping it.
So really? Franco is gone.
I'm not too displeased.
Gary Oldman instead. If anything, that's an upgrade.
It is an upgrade.
I mean, I'm not a massive Franco fan, so I can live without him on screen, to be honest.
But Circus remains as Caesar. So
that's crucial.
That is, because it's great.
We also get Kerry Russell, Cody Smith McPhee, young actor.
Yeah.
Judy Greer!
Yes.
His thing for Girls continues.
Thank you. The biggest draw for me, though, in terms of the talent involved, Matt Reeves.
Yes, director has changed as well. So Cloverfield's Matt Reeves is in.
And I have no hesitation in saying that I loved his version of Let the Right One In. Let me in. I know a lot of people don't, but...
It's just unnecessary.
It is unnecessary,
but that does not change the fact that it is a very good film. It's like the American remake
of Funny Games. Both of them are interesting.
No, it's not like that.
No. Funny Games is
not very good.
It's not, actually. In fact, it is shot for shot. It actually makes it kind of boring.
Yeah.
Really boring. The
first ring is solid, but this is better than comparison.
I'm not going to be convinced. We'll move on.
My point is, I think it's a good choice.
I agree.
Yes, I
like Cloverfield.
I like Cloverfield. So following on from that, and they're excited about this one. It's another comedy.
I'm not surprised by that with a name like this.
Let's Be Cops.
Never heard of it.
Let's Be Cops.
That doesn't sound.
I hear things like Let's Be Cops, and I think Cop and a Half, or basically things with cops in the title. I don't know.
Copland.
Besides Copland.
I will take your thesis and
I will reject it.
Thank you.
I will say Copland is actually overrated. But that's fine.
Do you know what? I wouldn't disagree. A little bit overrated.
Still a fine film.
It's a fine film, but that's all it is.
Let me just read the synopsis I found here for Let's Be Cops. It's the ultimate buddy cop movie, except for one thing. They're not cops.
What?
When two struggling pals dress as police officers for a costume party, they become neighborhood sensations. But when these newly minted heroes get tangled in a real-life web of mobsters and dirty detectives, they must put their fake badges on the line.
Tell me who's in it.
Tell you who's in it. Okay. Nina Dobrev, Jake Johnson, who are these even the leads? Rob Riggle's in it. Andy Garcia's in it. Damon Wayans Jr. is in it.
Okay.
So Damon Wayans is one of the leads.
Oh, good night.
And out. As Andy Garcia, which, we, you know, he's Andy Garcia.
So it's going to, it's like going to be a red-letter year for the Al Fox comedy, so...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You have high hopes of that, Fox. We hope to see those broken out for your sake.
Now, 3 weeks later, on October 3rd, David Fincher's Gone Girl.
Oh, yes. Right.
We have spoken about it before on the pod.
Yeah.
We've been a split of opinion on the trailer, I think.
Yes, I think so.
But it's still David Fincher directing.
Oh, you'll be there because it's David Fincher.
Ben Affleck.
I'll be there because of David Fincher. Ben Affleck, definitely.
Rosamund Pike.
It just looks like he's copying his visual style from Social Network. In terms of how it looks and how it's put together, I'm seeing nothing different from the films he's made before recently. And that might sound like a shallow complaint, but it does. I know, but it just sounds like he's reaching into an old bag of tricks here.
I know.
It'll be the cast and the plot that's at the plot is intriguing. It sounds it sounds almost kind of workaday for someone like Fincher. But then again, he also did Girl with Dragon Tattoo, which is quite a workaday plot as well.
So it's Gillian Flynn adapting her own book. She's dramatically changed the end, which came in for a lot of criticism.
Well, didn't the original end come in for a lot of criticism?
That's what I'm saying. It does divert away from the book, or diverge away from the book. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
It's a Fincher film. I'll be in the cinema watching any new David Fincher film. It doesn't matter where he goes. He's always interesting.
Oh, well, he is that. Whether it'll be good or not remains to be seen.
But it's the challenge. It's the fun of it all.
It is. This is why we do what we do.
3 weeks later, on the 24th of October, is the actual dystopian young adults.
I thought we were escaping one set of films from a company, but they would have just... future, please God, just somebody stop making them.
This one is Maze Runner, and this one centers on young male protagonists.
I was going to say Maze Production.
It's a bit different in that respect. So there is not a strong solo female lead. This one has a male lead.
A strong male lead. Well, it's about time.
You don't see that in films, not nearly enough.
No, indeed not. Group of young boys, they're trapped in this maze.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, that sounds good. I like that.
Yeah, imagine
are you being sarcastic? I can't tell.
Imagine Battle Royale, but with a maze instead.
I got trapped in a maze once in Australia, and I didn't like it. That's all I'll say about mazes. I got claustrophobic, and I didn't want it.
Wow, that story is amazing.
Oh, God.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, come on. Give me
a... Patricia Clarkson.
It has Patricia Clarkson.
Who's fantastic.
But Will Poulter is back.
Yes, Will Poulter is back. But the trailer looks interesting. The poster nicely used a big maze on it. So, you know,
it has to.
The book is popular. So there
of course
that.
It is.
Well, makes everything okay.
I'm reading my dystopian teen thing at the moment to get into the bookshops. Mm.
It's not for you. It's not aimed at
you. It's not aimed at what? This is crazy. Fox sort herself out.
So the big old gap, and then we're moving on into December. So, on the 5th of December is a new animated film from Fox, and it's Home.
Okay.
So, it's got Jim Parsons, who is best known to audiences as Sheldon Cooper.
Only known, surely.
The Big Bang Theory. alongside J-Lo and Rihanna.
Oh,
Steve Martin.
Okay, so that's... Yeah. One name I care about.
It's another one of these films which sees a group of aliens seeking refuge on Earth. It's not new.
We haven't seen this before.
Yeah. No, indeed not.
This sounds awful. But looks, you know, who knows?
It
who
looks knows? Colourful and
colourful. We're not 6 months old now.
It's
not more than that. It's
aimed at 6-year-olds. It's out.
It's not aimed at you, Dave.
Yes, 3 weeks before Christmas.
Some sort of conspiracy here.
Three weeks before Christmas.
Yeah,
it has to be done, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Grant, that is their...
Speaking of films I don't care about.
Yeah, and also Out for Christmas, 1 week before Christmas on the 19th of December, is a third Night at the Museum.
A third.
What the world really wanted.
Apart from love, sweet love.
Ben Stiller's bank manager, I'm sure, was interesting. Ben Stiller had a Christmas movie out last year with Secret Life of Walter Mitty, so now he's got...
Oh, yes, I heard that was amazing.
It's not.
But I enjoy...
Oh, you were being sarcastic.
No, stop. I enjoy Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
And I didn't, so... Are you
I'm not surprised by that you didn't, though.
Yeah. What do
it's
I enjoy?
It's not aimed at you.
It's not aimed at you, Phil. Cold, cynical art.
I went into it wanting it to be an enjoyable experience, and I had an enjoyable experience. You went into it as a heartless bastard.
I went into it as a fan of the story, and he bastardized it from start to finish.
It's a complete... It is no way...
Anyway, we're getting off. We're getting off.
We are. The point is, Night of the Museum 3 is coming, and we don't want it.
It's another time Ben Stiller's hapless security guard will be locked in...
How many times can you read these?
Does he get locked in his own museum? Why does he let these
things
come alive?
Somebody should fire him and say, listen, you're not very good at whatever you're supposed to be doing.
And also, these things are coming alive at night. Shouldn't he just, I don't know, tell the world?
No,
because, you know, we need women.
It sounds dreadful. I saw the first movie, didn't like it. Saw the trailer for the second movie, was never going to watch it, and I'm pretty sure...
Is Owen Wilson back? That is what I want to know. It's very important to me to know if Owen Wilson is in the film, because if he is, I'm not seeing
it. You're not? Oh,
I like Owen Wilson.
Harsh. Well, I'll tell you who is in it. Robin Williams is back as Teddy Roosevelt. Rebel Wilson is in it.
Oh, well, we have a Wilson, so at least that's something.
And Owen Wilson.
Oh, Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Hold on.
He plays Rebel Wilson.
But, alas, the late Mickey Rooney.
Oh.
I'm definitely not going to see it.
And, uh-oh, Ricky Gervais is back too.
Oh, good God, I knew he'd be in there somewhere.
Oh, and, Ben Kingsley.
Sir Ben Kingsley.
He doesn't insist on it. He's dismissed that rumour many times.
It doesn't matter. He is still Sir Ben Kingsley. He was knighted... And he deserved it, so we're going to call him.
Right, fine. Sir Ben, Sir Kingsley, Sir.
And speaking of sirs, moving on to the movie after this on the 26th of December, it promises to be absolutely crazy.
The Bob Marley, story.
Sir Ridley Scott's biblical epic. Exodus.
Two crazy biblical epics in 1 year. I can't take it.
Not nearly be as interesting as...
Nowhere even close.
I'll bet you anything.
This one has Christian Bale.
Yeah, but it has Ridley Scott.
Christian in a Bible story. Ah, stop my sides. I don't know. Ridley Scott, you're not on a good run lately. Counselor, really? Prometheus, just no. You make this good, or I've lost all faith.
He's got Prometheus 2 coming.
He does.
The film nobody wants, except people who, on the same thing with the Lone Ranger.
Newly repeated accountant wants it.
It's not good.
It's not good. It looks pretty. Yeah. In fact, it is. This is the only comparison you'll ever hear between Prometheus and Tree of Life. It is the best looking film that was released since the Tree of Life. Other than that,
it is
near devoid of merit.
The technical achievement aside, it's dreadful.
Yeah, it really is. That's Damon Lindelof to blame
so
yet again.
I was so disappointed
in Prometheus because wanted it to be
you
so
you and everyone
good.
Else.
I mean, I went in genuinely with a lot of goodwill.
And then there was a massive turning wheel and a woman running... Straight. Why would you run straight in front of it? I don't know.
But it didn't matter because I didn't care about her character or any of the characters.
Yes.
And a waste of Michael Fassbender.
And a waste of...
Sorry. We're getting...
Exodus is based on Moses and the story of Exodus. The Jews leaving Egypt or being led from Egypt by Moses. So Christian Bale in the lead. Christian Bale as Moses. Who doesn't want to see that?
I don't know. The problem is, anybody who ever plays Moses, they're automatically going to be compared to Charlton Heston. Now that's a fight I'd like to see. Charlton Heston versus Christian Bale.
See it unless it gets absolutely shocking reviews, because it sounds interesting.
It sounds interesting. The cast is a good one too. Alongside Christian Bale, you have Aaron Paul, Sigourney Weaver, Joel Edgerton, Ben Kingsley, John Turturro.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Ben Mendelsohn, we're there.
Oh, yes.
We're there. Chaim Abbas, great cast, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to deliver where it promises, but.
Nowhere even close. It's actually retitled Exodus Gods and Kings.
No, we're not calling it that.
No, of course we're not, but that's just what it says.
Just called Exodus, or Exodus Through the Gift Shop.
Hey! Hello to Banksy.
Very well done, Matt. Very well.
Boom, boom.
I put a cap on it.
Anyway, that's out on St. Stephen's Day.
I do like a good movie on St. Stephen's Day, so...
I like a lot of football on St. Stephen's Day, but anyway...
I like to go to see a film on St. Stephen's Day.
I like watching the DVDs I get at Christmas on St. Stephen's Day.
Because in the last couple of years I've went to see Mission Impossible 4 and Jack Reacher and I can't remember what else but I went
last
to
film
see
I went to see that was released, Stephen Zabel's Girl with Dragon Tattoo, actually.
And that. I went to see that as well. Mm. So, yeah, so this will just continue the streak. It'll be good.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope.
So that's where we'll leave it for the week.
Excellent.
Thank you very much, gents.
Oh, thank you. As always.
Pleasure.
If you want to catch up with the podcast, you can download it from the website. You can also download it from iTunes. You can catch all of us on Twitter and Facebook at skanon.com, skanon_com on Twitter, and skanon on Facebook. You can find us at the website, and you can find us at our individual Twitter accounts. I'm Niall X. Murphy.
I'm Cynical Phil.
And I'm the boringly titled Jacob.
You can find us in a lot of places. We're omnipotent.
Yes. Yeah. You can usually find us here in the lighthouse, though, if you really want to actually physically.
Probably find me in a bar if you're looking on Friday.
We're done. We're out.
Bye.
Bye.